ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 9 चैप्टर 7 टेक्स्ट नंबर 1। श्री शुक उवाच मान्धातु पुत्र प्रवरो योऽम्बरीषः प्रकीर्तितः पितामहेन प्रवृतो यौवनाश्वस्तु तत्सुतः हारीतस्तस्य पुत्रोऽभून् मान्धातुर्प्रवरा इमे। Translation: Shukdev Goswami said, the most prominent among the sons of Mandhata was he who is celebrated as Ambarisha. Ambarisha was accepted as son by his grandfather Yavanashva. Ambarisha's son was Yavanashva, and Yavanashva's son was Harita. In Mandhata's dynasty, Ambarish, Harit, and Yavanashva were very prominent. I've been asked to read until verse number 7, verse number 5, 6, and 7. So I'll continue reading translations and then read the purports. The serpent brothers of Narmada gave Narmada to Purukutsa. Being sent by Vasuki, she took Purukutsa to the lower region of the universe. Small purport. Before describing the descendants of Purukutsa, the son of Mandhata, Shukdev Goswami first describes how Purukutsa was married to Narmada, who was induced to take him to the lower region of the universe. Next translation. There in Rasatal, the lower region of the universe, Purukutsa, being empowered by Lord Vishnu, was able to kill all the Gandharvas who deserved to be killed. Purukutsa received the benediction from the serpents that anyone who remembers this history of being brought by Narmada to the lower region of the universe will be assured of safety from the attack of snakes. Next translation. The son of Purukutsa was Trasadasyu, who was the father of Anaranya. Anaranya's son was Haryashva, the father of Praruna. Praruna was the father of Tribandhana. Next translations, 5 and 6. The son of Tribandhana was Satyavrata, who celebrated by the name Trishanku. Because he kidnapped the daughter of a Brahmana when she was being married, his father cursed him to become a Chandala, lower than a Shudra. Thereafter, by the influence of Vishwamitra, he went to the higher planetary system, the heavenly planets, in his material body. But because of the prowess of the demigods, he fell back downward. Nonetheless, by the power of Vishwamitra, he did not fall all the way down. Even today, he can still be seen hanging in the sky, head downward. We'll read last verse, text number 7. Trishankavo Harishchandro Vishwamitra Vashishtayoho Yanmittam Abhudyuddham Pakshinor Bahuvarshikam. The son of Trishanku was Harishchandra. Because of Harishchandra, there was a quarrel between Vishwamitra and Vashishta, who for many years fought one another, having been transformed into birds. Purport. Vishwamitra and Vashishta were always inimical. Formerly, Vishwamitra was a Kshatriya, and by undergoing severe austerities, he wanted to become a Brahmana, but Vashishta would not agree to accept him. In this way, there was always disagreement between the two. Later, however, Vashishta accepted him because of Vishwamitra's quality of forgiveness. Once Harishchandra performed a yajna for which Vishwamitra was a priest, but Vishwamitra, being angry at Harishchandra, took away all his possessions, claiming them as contribution of Dakshina. Vashishta, however, did not like this, and therefore a fight arose between Vashishta and Vishwamitra. The fighting became so severe that each of them cursed the other. One of them said, "May you become a bird," and the other said, "May you become a duck." Thus both of them became birds and continued fighting for many years because of Harishchandra. We can see that such a great mystic yogi as Shaubari became a victim of sense gratification, and such great sages as Vasishtha and Vishwamitra became birds. This is the material world. Abrahma bhuvanal loka punar avratin arjuna. Within this material world or within this universe, however elevated one may be in material qualities, one must suffer the conditions of birth, death, old age and disease. Janma mrityu jara vyadhi. Therefore, Krishna says that this material world is simply miserable. Dukkhalayam ashashvatam. The Bhagavatam says, padam padam yat vipadam. At every step here there is danger. Therefore, because the Krishna consciousness movement provides the opportunity for the human being to get out of this material world simply by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, this movement is the greatest benediction in human society. I seek the blessings of the devotees to speak something. I asked Radhanath Swami Maharaj once, in what mood should we speak to elevated devotees like all of you assembled here? And Maharaj said that one should beg the blessings of the devotees to speak what Krishna wants you to hear. So, what I really need to hear is about the nature of the false ego. And we can see lessons here in the pastimes of Vishwamitra and Vasishtha, how false ego can drive one nuts, completely drive one nuts. And I picked up the story from the appendix of Ramayana by Krishna Dharma Prabhu, and the story of Vishwamitra and Vasishtha. Vishwamitra and Vasishtha are described in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam to be two of the Sapta Rishis. And it's described that Vishwamitra was in a great dynasty coming from great sage Kusha, and his father's name was Gadiraj. So Vishwamitra, because of being a descendant of Kusha, is also called Kaushika. He was a king. And as a king, he happened to enter the ashram of Vasishtha. And Vasishtha was very eager to offer all hospitality to Vishwamitra Muni. Vishwamitra Muni was very Kaushika king. He was very satisfied. No? Just offer me whatever you can. Don't go out of your way. But Vasishtha was very eager to show hospitality. So when Vasishtha insisted again and again, Vishwamitra finally obliged. And Vasishtha requested his Kamadenu cow, name was Subala. Subala, please produce wonderful eatables, nice beverages for not only Vishwamitra but his entire army who's taken refuge here. So Subala produced lots of wonderful delicacies to serve Vishwamitra and his army. Vishwamitra and his army were very satisfied with the offerings. But then Vishwamitra started staring at Subala. And he told Vasishtha that, O Vasishtha, whatever is best should be offered to the king. So I am the king, and what you have is the best. It should be offered to me. Vasishtha, he said, I can't do that, because this cow is not just producing objects for my sense gratification. She is actually producing a ghee for yajna, by which everyone is benefited. Vishwamitra insisted that, no, I'm never used to hearing a no when I ask for something. Either you provide the cow or I'll snatch it away. Now Vasishtha, he said, O king, because of being a Kshatriya, you may speak like this. But because of being a Brahmana, my nature is to forgive. So I forgive you for what you spoke. So go away. But Vishwamitra, he was infuriated because he was not used to being refused anything. That's sometimes a problem. When we don't get used to being refused. So he was so angry, and then he wanted to show the strength, his own strength. So he asked his army, take this Subala away. And the army was taking away Subala. Vasishtha Muni didn't retaliate. But then Subala started crying, Oh Master Vasishtha, after having served you for so many years, is this the kind of treatment for me? Vasishtha said, Well, I'm not wanting to retaliate. He is snatching you away. the cow said, you just instruct me to stay and I will stay. So Vasishtha said, stay. And immediately the cow, Subala, from her body, she produced so many armies, so many soldiers. All of them defeated Vishwamitra's army and Vishwamitra became bound completely. He was brought to Vasishtha. Vasishtha again said, Vishwamitra, you have made a mistake. Do not repeat this. I leave you. Now look at the nature of false ego. When one is intoxicated by false ego, one cannot stop. One doesn't know when to stop. So Vishwamitra, he thought, how did Vasishtha defeat me like this? Yes, it's because of his yogic power. I will also equip myself with yogic power. And then it's explained that Vishwamitra left his kingdom for higher yogic powers, went to the forest, did so much of penance. It's a long story, we won't get into it. And then he got more power. And then again, it's explained that he came to fight against Vasishtha after being equipped with power given by different demigods. But Vasishtha completely defeated Vishwamitra. In fact, he killed Vishwamitra's 100 sons. And this time again, Vishwamitra was completely spellbound. And he realized it's not just yogic power, it is spiritual power of Vasishtha. So he started performing even severe penances. And then it's explained that the king, who was described in the previous verse, Trishanku, who was also in the same dynasty as Anaranya. So this Trishanku, he was wanting to go to heavenly planets without performing the required austerities, without becoming pious. So he approached Vasishtha, please perform yajna by which I can seek elevation to heavenly planets without performing any piety. Vasishtha said, that's not possible. I can't violate the laws of nature. So Trishanku knew what to do. Because he knew the enmity between Vishwamitra and Vasishtha, he approached Vishwamitra. And he knew that Vishwamitra, just because he wants to be inimical to Vasishtha, will oblige Trishanku. Look at how complicated false ego is. How complicated. So he went to Vishwamitra, and Vishwamitra was very happy to do the service for Trishanku. And then he performed yajnas. Trishanku was being taken up. Indra didn't allow Trishanku to come to the heavenly planets. A long story. And Trishanku was hanging upside down, neither up nor down. So then when Vishwamitra was requested, he created another replica of the heavenly abode for Trishanku, etc., etc. And then he realized, what have I done? All the austerity I did, all the power I got, I just threw it away. Because of my enmity. When one develops this envious attitude, one can throw away any piety, any culture, any knowledge that he has acquired. How powerful false ego is. Brajbihari Prabhu in his Bhagavatam class on Vaishnava Prad very nicely quoted that Jananivas Prabhu was once asked, why do we commit Vaishnava Prads? And Jananivas Prabhu said that we commit Vaishnava Prads because of the desire to control. To desire to control others. Whether it be disciples, whether it be one whom you have preached. Control their lives, control their emotions, control their thoughts, control their speech. And when one is obsessed with such a desire to control, one will do any damn thing. And that's Vaishnava Parad. So powerful. And rightfully, the scriptures talk about this kind of mentality as intoxication. It's intoxicating. Because when one is intoxicated, one doesn't see who's a relative, who's a friend, who's a foe. Shoot at sight. That's the kind of order. Sometimes these governments give you shoot at sight order. That's a shoot at sight order. False ego. When one is intoxicated. Shoot, shoot, shoot. Doesn't discriminate. So this is so powerful. I just heard that Sri Rama Prabhu, in one of his counseling picnics, he divided the devotees. He had a game. He divided the devotees into two groups. One group of devotees was given balloons, inflated balloons. And the other group of devotees was given needles. And the devotees were, it was announced that the devotees carrying balloons, run. And guess what happened? Yes, the devotees carrying balloons ran, but
The devotees carrying the needles ran behind them. They had no instruction to run behind the devotees carrying balloons. But they were running. And in fact, they were celebrating when they pricked the balloons of the devotees. Wow, we did it. They thought this was the game. But then Sri Ramaprabhu, I heard, he revealed that this was just to show how pricking, finding fault, eliminating people from our way is the nature, has become our second nature. Almost so spontaneous that the people with balloons are asked to run and the devotees carrying needles. Of course, they're very humble devotees. But the point is, we have to recognize how strong, how dangerous a situation we are in. And then scriptures are all the time reminding us. All the time. Slightest provocation. We see this on our individual scale. We also see on a global scale. There is this documentary movie called Why We Fight. And it's also a book which forms the basis of that book. Of that documentary. And this documentary is all about why United States fights wars. Because by fighting wars, they actually make a lot of money. In the name of war, they run an entire military complex, which creates jobs, which creates money, which creates so many projects for US universities. All the US universities, they get funding from an organization called DARPA, which is all defense related. And in the name of defense, they have any damn project. It's not defense, it's offense. But the point is, it has become such a second nature that a country like the United States is simply fighting wars only for the sake of expanding its economic imperialism. Same thing. When I was looking at this documentary, I was thinking, this is the nature of the false ego. Just waging wars simply to make sure that my intoxication triumphs. And as very nicely described in this purport, the nature is that at every step there is a danger. Every step there is a danger. But at every step, our mind rationalizes so beautifully. I'm sure when the incident of Shaubari Muni with Garuda took place, to him it might have appeared very natural. This fish is running away from Garuda. Obviously, I'm a sage. I can't see this fish suffering in my region. Here, fish, take my protection. And he could have rationalized it very well. But little did he realize that this was his desire to control. And same thing with Vishwamitra here. While I'm teaching at IIT, this time at the beginning of the course, I announced that I will be taking surprise quizzes. Surprise exams. Quizzes mean exams in IIT. So every class, just to make sure that attendance is good, I would just once in a while take surprise exams. And I told no complaints after the class. But inevitably, after every exam I would take, there would be 5 students coming to me and very genuinely expressing reasons why they didn't do well or why I should not consider them for this exam and so on and so forth. And I just realized, this is the kind of excuse we are always giving to Krishna. We offend devotees. We create problems in the society. We become an obstacle in the lives of devotees. And then we are always giving so-called genuine excuses. But as explained here, at every step we are going to be tested. Every step we are going to be tested. And the test can sometimes be so subtle. Like Gaur Govind Maharaj in one beautiful lecture, he was explaining that if you become proud that you are a nice Vaishnava, Maya Devi will become a very nice Vaishnavi. And then she will chant so sweetly and so attentively in front of you. It's not necessarily just the opposite sex. It's just everywhere. Maya Devi is always there to help us rationalize. She can convince us that she is taking us away from Maya. That's how powerful Maya is. So, one may rationalize that, well, offenses are not to be made to great devotees, pure devotees. But is there a problem if we offend someone who is not a pure devotee? Is that an issue? I was hearing a lecture of Giriraj Maharaj, and one devotee asked this question to Giriraj Maharaj. Is it a problem if we offend someone who is not a pure devotee? And Giriraj Maharaj said, this just means you want to offend. This is not a good question. Yes, spitting out the venom on someone is a problem, but having the venom in the heart is a bigger problem. And a devotee should be so cautious about it. because that can completely ruin a spiritual life. And moreover, very beautifully it's described in this book by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur called Madhurya Kadamani. He describes that one may think that the offense of sadhu ninda operates only in relation to a Vaishnava who's fully and perfectly qualified with all the qualities mentioned in scriptures. Govind Prabhu was explaining in Sunday Bhagavatam class that there are secondary qualities, 26 in number, Tatikshava, Karunika, there are very nice qualities described in Nectar of Devotion. But they are secondary. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that if a devotee thinks that here is a person who is not having all the 26 qualities and I have offended him, the Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that's a bigger offense. Because your fault was to offend and now you are pushing your fault onto him. So it's a bigger offense. And therefore he makes a very powerful point. Such a person attempts to minimize his own offense by pointing out some defect in the other person. So offense at any scale is bad, and to rationalize that offense is a bigger offense. Because actually you're doing more fault finding. And therefore, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, all the more then a devotee who may show occasional faults should be considered a sadhu. All the more. One has to be even more careful. So one may rationalize this way. Or one may rationalize that I'll chant the holy names of Krishna and then I'll be taken care of. But then we again hear from Padma Puran that that's another offense. That's a second offense to holy name. To commit sinful activities on the strength of the holy name. So therefore, Vaishnava Aparadh or offensive behavior in any form, in any shape, is never pardonable. It's actually spiritual suicide. And as we are seeing in this purport, the root cause of this is intoxication. There's a very beautiful pastime in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and this is about Indra offending Brihaspati. So Indra is watching his Apsaras dance, he's in the courtroom, and Brihaspati enters the courtroom, and Indra is thinking, here he comes again. He comes here every day. And every day I meticulously offer him respects, but here he comes again. It's okay. And he goes on watching the Apsaras, doesn't even give a damn to Brihaspati. And of course we hear that Indra, the entire demigod army was defeated by the demons. And then Indra, his eyes opened. They all went to Brahmaji. Oh Brahma, what happened? And Brahma speaks a very beautiful verse. He says, Aho bata shura shrestha yabadram vakritam mahat brahmishtam brahmanam dantam aishwaryanna abhyadantyata. He's saying, oh Sura Shrestha, oh best of demigods, why has all this happened? He's saying, brahmishtam brahmanam dantam. You are completely maddened because of madness resulting from your material opulence. You failed to receive Brihaspati properly when he came to your assembly. And that is why you are doomed. And very significant word in the translation, because of madness resulting from material opulence. So there is this beautiful verse by Kunti Devi. How one can be maddened? How one can be maddened? Janmaishwarya Shruta Shribhir Enamana Madha Puman. Madha. This word Madha is used again and again so many times in Srimad Bhagavatam, in so many forms, in the pastime of Nalkuvar and Manigrave. So many pastimes. Enamana Madha Puman. When one is intoxicated by birth, high parentage, birth means high parentage or high family lineage, Aishwarya, opulences, when is intoxicated, I am so powerful. I am so powerful, my empire is going to expand all the time. So high birth, Aishwarya, opulence, material opulence. Shruta means learning. When one is intoxicated by learning, or Shribhir, by beauty, beauty of the body, beauty of any of the faculty of the body, when one is intoxicated by any one of these, Naivarhati abhidatum vai. Tvam akinchana gocharam. Oh Krishna, You are the property of the impoverished. A person who is completely intoxicated with any one of these four, how can he attain you? So Kunti Maharani is providing a beautiful prayer to the Lord, but also a very beautiful warning to all of us. And the point of intoxication is not just about possessing, but even the desire to possess. Like sometimes you go to village, rural India, actually many times you go to a village, Gram Panchayat, just in the outskirts of the city. But it is a village in name only. Because everyone there is dreaming about the city. Therefore, I recently went to Kolhapur and Roop Vilas Prabhu told that for Venu Madhuri, they chose a village really far away from Kolhapur so that the intoxication is less. And then he gave a beautiful lecture at the village called Ramanwadi. I was there and he was telling the villagers that here is this devotee, one Mataji, she had come from London. So see, Prabhupada has established temples all over the world, but you all be satisfied here. Because the nature of intoxication is not just when you possess, but when you want to possess. People just worship. Ah, I want to be like him. And when I'm like him, I want to be like him. And when I'm like him, I want to be like him. And this intoxication never dies. Never dies. And we can see Shastra replete with examples. I will just take a few examples from the scriptures of intoxication with one of these four qualities. So the example of Janma comes in the pastime of Sringi Rishi. When Sringi, the son of Shaunak Muni, heard that his father had been garlanded by a snake by Maharaj Parikshit, Sringi did not consider why it was the case, why it happened. Prabhupada explains very beautifully that by the influence of Kali, this son of Brahmana, Sringi, he was son of Brahmana, he became puffed up with Brahmanical power. And he started comparing Maharaj Parikshit with a watchdog, with a crow. See, this watchdog Parikshit. Prabhupada says he was a watchdog because he was taking care of the subject. But this is not how a Brahmana is supposed to speak. So complete disrespect. I didn't even assess what the situation was. And he was so, Prabhupada says he was so puffed up with his Brahmanical power. And not only that, how intoxicated he was, that he cursed Maharaj Parikshit in the presence of all his Brahmana friends. So Prabhupada said, it was so childish. He was simply trying to show off his power to his Brahmana friends. That see, I can curse Maharaj Parikshit. So the intention was completely wrong. Because he was maddened. That's what Prabhupada says. Again, in the example of Gopal Chakravarti, of offending Haridas Thakur, Gopal Chakravarti was a Brahmana. And there's this beautiful verse, that Paramasundara Pandita Nutana Yavana Namabhase Mukti Shuni Nahoila Sahana. Paramasundara, this Gopal Chakravarti, he was in the assembly in which Haridas Thakur proclaimed that simply by Namabhas one can get liberation. And Gopal Chakravarti, Paramasundara, he was beautiful. And he was also from a Brahmana family. And this Haridas, he is a Yavana. And therefore, he started offending Haridas. Haridas, what you have said is wrong, and I'm going to cut off your nose if it is wrong. The glories of the holy name, you have overestimated. Haridas said, you don't have to cut. If what I've said is wrong, may my limbs melt off. And of course we know that Gopal Chakravarti's limbs melted off in leprosy. Again, intoxication. We already saw the example of Shaubari Muni offending Garudji. And then there is the example of Yadus offending Narad Muni in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Prabhupada explains very nicely in one place that Krishna was extremely concerned that after his departure, the Yadus might get puffed up because of their connection with Krishna, family lineage. And Prabhupada says, same in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that Lord Gauranga Mahaprabhu was also concerned about his family lineage. Advaita Acharya and Nityananda Prabhu, the three Vishnu Tattvas, they were concerned. And therefore Lord Gauranga didn't leave any family lineage because it's so natural. Just imagine the Yadus. The Yadus are Lord's intimate devotees, but for them Krishna is concerned that they may get intoxicated because of their connection with me. And they will offend everyone. Therefore, Krishna made such a divine arrangement that instead of just blindly shoot at sight everyone, they got benedicted, or in some sense delivered by Narad Muni. Narad Muni's curse on them. When they just outside Dwaraka, when Narad Muni and the sages were assembled, the Yadus dressed up Samba like a woman, pregnant lady. Her stomach was bulging. And they asked, O Narada, O Narad Muni, Muni Ustreshta, will this child be a boy or a girl? Who will this? Can you tell something about the boy? And Narad Muni was extremely angry because he knew, Prabhupada, it's a very beautiful verse there, that the Yadus, they were, the beautiful verse, words used in the verse, Upashangrayaha Prapuchuhu Avinitaha Vinitavat. Avinitaha means not humble, and Vinitavat, acting as if humble. So when they had gone to Narad Muni, they were not humble, they were trying to make fun, but they were acting as if humble. And in the purport, it's explained that actually speaking, they were not anything but humble. When you are not humble and you try to pretend humble for the sake of exploiting someone, then you are anything but humble. And very beautifully in the purport, Hridayananda Maharaj goes on to explain what intoxication the Yadus were under. And Narad Muni wanted to cure them of that intoxication. Of course, and he also wanted to assist Lord Krishna in his pastime of winding up his earthly leela. So they were, Narad Muni predicted that this child, this a club will be produced from the womb, and this club will be the result, will be the cause of destruction of the entire Yadu dynasty. And then we also see the example of Suruchi. How Suruchi is explained that she was so proud of being the dear queen, dearmost queen of King Uttanapad, that Ati Garvita, she was so proud, and therefore when Dhruva Maharaj requested if he could sit on father's lap, right in front of his father, in a voice that is audible to his father, she said, no, you can't sit on his lap. You can't sit on his lap unless you are born from my womb. Again, an example of intoxication because of birth, because of just being a dearmost queen. And one can go on to offend a small child in this way. It's actually so frightening. At every step in our life, we have to be so careful. And we also see the example of Shishupal offending Krishna. Shishupal thought, who is this Krishna? Gwala. And he started blaspheming Krishna. In fact, Krishna tells Rukmini that all these kings, Shishupal and Rukmi, Shalva, Jarasan, they were all so much pumped up with their worldly possessions. I did not care a fig for anyone who came before them. Krishna uses very powerful words. They were so puffed up with their worldly possessions that they did not care a fig for anyone who came before them. So this is how we don't discriminate when you are intoxicated. And then there's example of Rupa Kaviraj offending Krishna Priya Thakurani. Even though he was a disciple of Krishna Priya Thakurani, when Krishna Priya Thakurani, who was a grand disciple of Narottam Das Thakur, entered a Srimad Bhagavatam discussion, he considered her unfit. You are a woman. And we also see in the pastime of Ramanujacharya, how his wife, she was offensive to Kanchipurna's wife, thinking that they are from lower caste. And in the case of Aishwarya, intoxication with Aishwarya, we consider Janma. The example is of Indra offending Brihaspati, so opulent he was, he didn't care. Daksha offending Lord Shiva. Prabhupada explains so beautifully in the purport that Daksha, even though being envious of Lord Shiva, he was appointed the chief of all Prajapatis. That was the cause of his excessive pride. He was so proud. And Prabhupada says, when a man becomes too proud of his material possessions, he can perform any disastrous act. He can do any damn thing. And that's what the US is doing. So Daksha was acting out of false prestige, and he started rebuking Lord Shiva in the Yajna auspicious arena. He said that Shiva looks so bad, he looks so obnoxious. He started blaspheming Lord Shiva. And he was also blaspheming Shiva because he didn't get up. He felt offended that Shiva didn't get up when Daksha entered the arena. But all this was because he was so proud. If one is not proud, if one is humble, Radhanath Maharaj often explains that if you are a beggar, if you feel you are a beggar, of course, if you feel you are a beggar and you are a beggar, then what is it that you have to be proud of? And if you are not proud of anything, you just can't offend others. And the example is given of Indra offending Lord Krishna. The nature of false pride is that when one has that disease, one sees others with that disease. So Indra, when he saw that the Brajvasis were not offering Indra Yajna, what did he decide? He decided that to remove the pride of the residents of Braja, I will send my clouds called Samvartaka. So he sent Samvartaka to remove the pride of Brajvasis. But what was Krishna's thinking? So Srila Sridhar Swami explains that Lord Krishna wanted to knock down the great mountain of false pride that had arisen within the Lord's tiny servant, Indra. It's Lord's tiny servant, a big mountain of pride had arisen, and Krishna wanted to knock it down. So we can see again, when one is proud, Shishupal, when he was so proud, that he started thinking Krishna is proud. That's how he perceived Krishna is proud. That's another example of offense. Indra offending Durvas Muni. Again, when Durvas Muni entered the kingdom of Indra and he found that Indra was going with Airavata, he just very happily offered Indra his flower garland, Maha. But Indra was so proud of his material wealth that he took this garland and placed it around the trunk of Airavata. And Airavata doesn't discriminate. He just threw it, tossed it and crushed it beneath his feet. And Durvas Muni was very angry. Again, Durvas Muni offended Ambarish Maharaj. Again, a similar point is being made there. When Ambarish Maharaj, with the consultation of learned sages, broke his fast as he was waiting for Durvas Muni, while preserving his fast, simply drinking water, Durvas Muni came back and he knew Ambarish has drunk water. And very beautifully it's explained in Bhagavatam that Durvas thought, this Ambarish is so proud of being a king that in my absence he has drunk water. So, it's explained that he was so proud of his yogic siddhis, that was his opulence, that he tried to create so much harm for Ambarish Maharaj. Again, he saw Ambarish Maharaj as proud. And Ambarish Maharaj has accepted whatever Durvas Muni sent towards him. And then King Rahuguna offended Jadabharat. Again, he was so intoxicated that he was speaking such sarcastic words as Jadabharat was carrying the palanquin. It's very beautifully explained that Naradeva Abhimanam, that King Rahuguna, he thought himself the ruler and he was under that intoxication. That's the word used. Or Madena, madness because of this thought. He was so mad that he started offending Jadabharat. Again, without inquiring who he is, even finding out what an exalted person he is. So when that shoot at sight. Shoot at sight means you don't find out whether this person, what is his background? Why is he performing this particular activity? No, absolutely no discrimination. And then example of Drupada offending Dronacharya. He was so proud of being a king that Dronacharya came asking to him, reminding him, our friendship, dear Drupada. Friendship? Drupada says, I'm your friend. Friendship can be recognized only among equals. Get out of here immediately. So like this, again, many examples of intoxication because of Aishwarya. And then intoxication of Ramachandra Khan. It's explained that very beautifully. Haridase loka puje sahitena pare tandra apamana karite nana upaya kore. Unable to tolerate that such respect was being offered to Haridas Thakur, Ramachandra Khan planned in various ways to dishonor him. Nana upaya. That's how the mind works. To destroy him, I will do anything. To the extent that Vishwamitra is willing to go against the scriptures to make Trishanku elevated, even though he is not qualified at all. Anything one will do. And then the example of Shruta. Too much learning. Like Saturday morning Bhagavatam class, or Sunday morning, Govind Prabhu explained how when one has too much information, one loses his innocence. And when innocence is lost, what is around the corner is aparad. And we find the example of Romaharshan Sutta, because he was given the opportunity to speak Bhagavatam and given blessings. Even when Balaramji entered the arena, he didn't even bother to stand up and respect him. He was sitting, and Balaramji thought, this pride in him must be destroyed. Or the example of Smartha Brahmanas in South India, who were laughing at the illiterate Brahmana, South Indian Brahmana, as he was reading Bhagavad Gita upside down. Keshav Kashmiri, he was also so proud, so puffed up, that he dared challenge the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he was bewildered on being defeated. In fact, he was asking Saraswati Devi, how is it possible? So he was so proud of his acquisition. Another classic example of being intoxicated by knowledge is Devanand Pandit. Devanand Pandit was giving Srimad Bhagavatam class. And Srivas Thakur, with a simple heart, simple oral reception, he was experiencing ecstasy in the words that Devanand Pandit spoke about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srivas Thakur started rolling on the ground. Devanand Pandit's disciples saw this to be an obstacle and they threw Srivas Thakur outside that audience. And Devanand Pandit didn't object. And very beautifully it's described in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. Obviously, because his students were so illiterate or uncultured, the guru was also uncultured. And finally, Sribhir. Manman is intoxicated by beauty. And the example is given of Upabharhana. Narad Muni, he describes his own past life, that I was a Gandharva Upabharhana. And I had such a beautiful face and pleasing, attractive bodily structure. I was most pleasing to the women of my city. And Narad Muni explains, thus I was bewildered. I was completely bewildered. That's another characteristic of intoxication. And then there was an offense that he committed and he was cursed. Very humbly he is presenting this case. So in this way, and the last example we'll take is of Nalukuvar and Manigriv, the beautiful Damodar pastime. And it's explained that they were not only intoxicated by liquor, they were also intoxicated by pride as they were bathing with the Apsaras. And Narad Muni passed by. The Apsaras, they had some decency. They covered their body. But what was the thought? They were so intoxicated by pride and liquor that they didn't even cover their bodies. Who's the Narad Muni? An obstacle again? And a very beautiful word is used here. Buddhi Bhramsho Rajogunaha. Shri Madad. He was Madad. Madad is again intoxication. Among all the attractions of material enjoyment, the attraction of riches bewilders one's intelligence more than having beautiful bodily features, taking birth in an aristocratic family and being learned. When one is uneducated but falsely puffed up by wealth, the result is that one engages his wealth in enjoying wine, women and gambling. So, Giriraj Maharaj explains that this lesson is extremely important for us. It was a very different kind of lecture. I found it very interesting. He was speaking the Srimad Bhagavatam first canto, how Ashwatthama, he released the Brahmastra, and Arjuna is asking Krishna, where is the effulgence coming from? And Krishna is telling Arjuna, that Vetedam Dronaputrasya Brahmam Astram Pradarshitam Naivasau Vedasamharam Pranabadha Upastite. So he's saying that this effulgence is because Ashwatthama, Dronaputra, has released it. And Giriraj Maharaj gives a very beautiful understanding of this verse from a different perspective. He says that for devotees, this instruction is even more important. Ashwatthama releasing Brahmastra and not knowing how to withdraw it was not his only fault. His bigger fault was that he was Dronaputra. And therefore, Giriraj Maharaj explains, somehow being fortunate children or grandchildren or great grandchildren of Srila Prabhupada, it's all the more binding on devotees to be so careful, because it is something that will affect not only our lives, it will affect others' lives as well. And he gives the example of Ashwatthama. And it is so subtle that one can mistake fault finding or one can mistake eliminating or shooting at sight as Vaishnava Seva. So Raghunath Das Goswami gives a very nice example. He says that sometimes devotees may take great pleasure talking about someone else's fault, how he should be improved or have the solution for him. And Raghunath Das Goswami says that this devotee is thinking that he is purifying himself and the society by enabling everyone to take a bath. But then he says, but little does he realize that actually he is taking bath in ass urine. He is not taking bath in Gomutra. He is not taking bath in Ganga Ujal, which many, or Yamuna Jal, which many devotees had in Yamuna, in Vrindavan. But he is taking bath in ass urine. So it's so abominable being in a community of devotees. And to even passively hear criticism, to even passively witness offense to a devotee is so dangerous. Professor Sanyal, disciple of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, wrote a nice article in Back to Godhead magazine. And he explains that when Haridas Thakur was offended by Gopal Chakravarti, all the devotees who were assembled there, they were feeling very apologetic. Apologetic not just because Gopal Chakravarti offended Haridas Thakur. They were feeling apologetic because they were witnessing this entire episode. And their heart was beating. How? He explains that they were feeling so remorseful and they begged forgiveness again and again for being in the audience where Haridas Thakur was being offended. So this is how powerful Vaishnava Aparadha is. I mean, it can completely take us away from Krishna consciousness. Even though one might have chanted the holy names for so many years, one single offense can completely take us away from Krishna. And this is explained in the Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, where Vrindavan Das Thakur minces no words to explain that even Lord Shiva, even the great Lord Shiva, if he who has drunk an ocean of poison, if he offends a devotee, what will happen? He falls down from his most elevated position. And then he says, if someone cannot understand even this, Vrindavan Das Thakur says, if someone cannot even understand this, that Lord Shiva could fall from his position and still blasphemes a Vaishnava, then life after life, he will go to hell and suffer. Janme, janme. Life after life, he will go to hell and suffer. And then he goes on to explain what the consequences of Vaishnava Aparadha are. Radhanath Maharaj was once asked this question. I mean, this was again told by Vrajbihari Prabhu in his class, that Maharaj, we chant the holy names and it's said that if you chant the holy names, you'll be eventually delivered. But how will Vaishnava Aparadha take us away from Krishna altogether? And he gave the beautiful example that if you have a pair of kartals that have been gifted to you, which were Prabhupada's own kartals, and you happen to go to a program at Mahaprabhu Prabhu's house and you leave them there. You come back and you are searching for the rest of the year for those pair of kartals and crying that you lost them. So, in essence, you have not lost the kartals. The kartals are still there. But to you, they are lost. Because you don't know where they are. Because they are inaccessible. So, simply the act of wanting to commit Vaishnava Aparadha, simply the act of becoming puffed up, that is sufficient to take us away from Krishna. And therefore, what is the recourse than to beg forgiveness at the lotus feet of the devotee? Raghunath Das Goswami explains that if a thorn enters your foot, is it a good idea to remove the thorn from your head? Is it a good idea to remove the thorn from hand, from your palms, from your face? If a thorn enters your foot, you remove the foot from your thorn, from your foot. I'm sorry. So he explains, similarly, if we commit Vaishnava Aparadha, what other recourse do we have than to beg forgiveness from the lotus feet of that devotee? To beg forgiveness. And Madhuri Kadambini, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, further elaborates that if you beg forgiveness and you keep begging forgiveness and the devotee is still upset with you, you should feel so remorseful at heart, so remorseful that I'm not able to satisfy this devotee. And in the mood of remorsefulness, one should chant the holy names. Not that I have offended him, I am chanting to compensate. No. But if the devotee is still not appeased, only then in a very, very pitiable condition of the heart, feeling extremely remorseful, one chants the holy name. And then one may get purified. This is how serious Vaishnava Aparadha is. But how powerful it can be simply to serve a Vaishnava. One can also look at it from that point of view. It's actually, the process is very simple. But that, all that comes between us is the false ego. Now, Vasishtha was so magnanimous that when Vishwamitra eventually became a Brahma Rishi, Vasishtha forgave Vishwamitra. and they became friendly. That's the exalted nature of Vasishtha. So it is not difficult to beg forgiveness from a devotee, but it is also very difficult because this we are intoxicated. And to come out of this intoxication, like when kisi ko chad jata hai, to utarna time lagta hai. So we are so much, itna chad gaya hai, ki utarne ko bahut time lag raha hai. And therefore when Prabhupada was asked, what is the definition of rasa? The closest definition Prabhupada could give, he said, it's like an ocean of LSD. That is rasa. Because that's all we can understand, ocean of LSD, because we are so intoxicated. That's the only difficulty. I'll conclude with a very beautiful pastime of a Sri Vaishnava, some Alwar. He was called by the name Neela. And he was extremely offensive. In fact, in his background, he had a team of dacoits. One dacoit was extremely expert at breaking locks, stealing and then putting back that lock as if nothing had happened. Another dacoit, another member of his team, he could stand on someone's shadow, and by standing on that shadow, he could capture people. So in this way, he had a band, and with this, he would just exploit everyone, loot everyone. But one day, as Neela was walking in South India, small town, he found that on a veranda of a house, he found a beautiful girl, and he felt attracted. He went to the house, knocked. A brahmana emerged. I want to marry that girl. Brahmana said, first of all, who are you? I am the great dealer, very powerful, well-known dacoit in this area. This brahmana said, actually, I am not the person to answer this question because she herself was a gift to us. We just found her abandoned by some celestial beings by the bank of a kunda in our neighborhood. So you go and ask her. So Neela went and asked this girl, I want to marry you. This is my qualification. I'm a big, very powerful person, dacoit. This girl said, I will marry you only if you become a Vaishnava. What do I have to do to become a Vaishnava? He said, you go to the priest in the Vishnu temple, he'll tell you how to become a Vaishnava. So Neela went to the Vishnu temple, approached the pujari, I want to become a Vaishnava. Pujari looked at him and said, are you sure? He said, yes, I want to become a Vaishnava. Tell me how to become. So this pujari, he went to Lord Vishnu, took the garland of the Lord, Mahagarland of the Lord, and put it around Neela and said, accept this garland with your heart and you will become a Vaishnava. So Neela took that garland and he also put some tilak and went back to the girl and said, now I become a Vaishnava. Girl said, not Vaishnava by appearance, you have to become Vaishnava by your actions. What do I have to do to become a Vaishnava by actions? Serve 1,000 Vaishnavas prasadam every day. He had the potency, of course. Every day serve 1,000 Vaishnavas prasadam. And then after serving them prasadam, wash their lotus feet and drink their charnamrit. Neela, he had his way to do this. He went and told his gang that get 100 Vaishnavas every day and organize prasadam for all of them. It's 1,000. Are you out of your mind, O Neela? Neela said, you follow my instruction, otherwise you will be out of your mind. So that's how they executed. So the dacoits, they went and they would drag Vaishnavas by their collar. They would get them every day, 1,000 Vaishnavas by their collar. They would make them sit and they would slap prasadam on their plates. Take. And then they would, after they ate, they would say, now stretch out your foot. They would carry buckets and wash everyone's feet one by one. And then take all the charanamrita to Neela. And Neela would just gulp it down. As he was accustomed to gulping other things. So this went on for 1 year. But then, it's amazing. Neela is actually one of the... I forgot the name of this acharya. Tirumangai Alvar. Tirumangai Alvar, he's considered the initiator of the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya for a different pastime. But the point is, he was so addicted eventually to the service of serving devotees that entire life he was just trying to find ways and means to serve devotees, prasadam and drink their charanamrit. This became his addiction. His habit completely changed. To the extent that he tried to rob Lakshmi and Narayan so as to get money to feed the Vaishnavas. And that's when he was trying to get the touring out of Mother Lakshmi, and he became the first Acharya in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya. So that's how powerful Vaishnava Seva can be. So one just has to give up any mental blocks to completely giving oneself to serving devotees. Because that is the only hope. But if one keeps this mental block, as Vrindavan Das Thakur says, one's intoxication will lead him to commit any damn activity. And that will take him away from Krishna for a long, long time. I beg all of your blessings that even a fraction of what was spoken today is something that I could implement in my own life. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki.